husband and I started attending Hoboken Grace about a year and a half ago. And listening to Chris's messages just changed my life, literally changed my life. Going back a little bit, I was baptized by the Catholic Church when I was 16 years old. And I learned a lot about God, about religion. But I definitely didn't learn about a loving God. I learned about the God that you feared. So years went by and I didn't step foot in church. And about 8 years ago, my brother took me to visit a small church upstate New York called Hope Restoration. I was open to the idea. I walked in. I listened to the service. After the service, the pastor came over, prayed over me, and the only thing I could do was just sob. I just cried. We lived in Queens at this point, so we needed to find a church there, and we started attending New Life Fellowship. Around that time, we decided to start a family, have a baby. And after many trials, medical procedures, we were unsuccessful. The only thing we ended up with were two ectopic pregnancies. The second one being quite serious, where I ended up in the hospital having major surgery. I was scared. I was freaked out. I thought I was going to die. My husband thought I was going to die. And I was just furious. I was scared, furious, angry, left alone, abandoned by God completely. I had Vincent by my side, my mother, my father, my brother, but I definitely didn't feel God anywhere near me. He abandoned me. Why was he doing this to me if I so wanted to be a mother? Why couldn't I? And that he was even putting me through this pain and surgeries and procedures and everything. So it was very difficult. I developed terrible anxiety and panic attacks. Within a couple months, it got so bad that I wouldn't want to leave the house. Once I left, I went outside, everything started spinning, everything was out of control. I absolutely had no control over myself. Everything was numb. And I literally had the fear of dying. So just to go on, you know, with everyday chores and work and everything, I had to start taking medication. And I also reached out to the church counselor there who walked us through a lot of stuff that was very helpful. And even though I was still very angry with God for not giving me my baby, I was still thankful to him every single day that my husband was by my side. So after, you know, a couple years went by, we moved to Jersey City. So now we had to look for another new church. And on the internet, I found Hoboken Grace. As soon as we stepped foot in there and I started listening to Chris, his words just hit home, and I started feeling better. I felt like this is where I needed to be. After my last in vitro fertilization, which was last spring, my anxiety got really bad again, and I reached out to Chris. He met me and talked to me and walked me through a lot of the things that I was then struggling with. And he gave me actually the best advice. He said, "Diana, I know that you have amazing trust in your husband. Why don't you start transferring some of that trust over to God?" And I thought that was impossible. It took a while for me to just digest that and start doing that. And once I did, all this weight just started lifting. I felt lighter. I felt better. I felt better as a woman, as a wife, as, you know, friends to my friends, just as a human being. I wasn't so bitter. I wasn't angry. Or even if I was angry, it was coming from a different place. I had some understanding. In the last year, some amazing things started happening. people, opportunities, possibilities started showing up in my life that I would have never realized before. I would have never noticed before. I would have been too weak to even see that that's a possibility, or this person is trying to help me and put me on the right path. So we actually are now, just last week, we received our foster parenting license, and we are now on the waiting list to be adoptive parents. Also, 2 weeks ago, my husband and I got baptized, and that evening, I was going to take my anxiety medication, which I take for the last 4 years, every single night. And it was 11 o'clock at night. I'm ready to take my medication, and my pills were gone from the house. I didn't have any pills in the house. I didn't have any pills in my purse. I started freaking out. Oh my God, what's going to happen? How am I going to go to work tomorrow? I'm going to have a headache. I'm going to panic. But my husband said, just sit down on the bed, try to relax, go to sleep. We'll deal with it in the morning. So that's what I did. I tried to close my eyes, and then I said, oh my God, I just got baptized today. Like, this cannot be a coincidence. This would be just... This cannot be a coincidence. I knew right away. So I said, God, if this is your way of showing me that I'm okay now, and that I can take on all these challenges that life gives me, then let it be like that. So it's been 2 weeks without my medication, and I'm doing pretty good. And I know that there's going to be, you know, tough days coming up and weeks and whatever that I need to go through. But I know that I'm going to be able to sail through it a lot easier than before. And I never thought that I would be a person that actually experiences God working in their life. But in the last few weeks, I definitely feel Him work in my life. And it's just an amazing feeling, and I feel completely protected by Him. That's my testimonial.
I love her story. I love the fact that, I love how she ends it, that, listen, I understand that this isn't the end. I understand that this isn't, you know, I'm not saying that everything's gotten better, that everything's gone away. But she understands and she sees that God's working in her life. And you know, I don't know today whether or not she's on medication or off medication. That's not what the story's about. This isn't about getting off of that. That's not what this is about. It's about realizing that not only is God real, but that God is interested in your life and wants to move and work in your life, and what can happen when that begins to play out. And the truth is that if you talk to Diana today, since that was recorded, because as you noticed, there weren't baptisms 2 weeks ago, so you're like, wait a second, when? This was recorded several months ago. And if you talk to her since then, her story has taken a lot of different twists and turns. As they got put on that list to become adoptive parents, they found out that they were pregnant. And for a little while, there was this huge, like, celebration, right? Like, this is incredible. What's God doing now? But they lost the baby. And all of a sudden, it was like, oh, no, what's... And what she talked about at the end of that is what she's lived. It hasn't just been all roses since that moment. It hasn't just been that everything's fixed and better and okay, so I don't have to be afraid anymore. But as she walked through that again, you saw a difference in her. You saw a difference in her because when you begin to see God for who He is, it changes what you're afraid of. And she walked through that, and her husband walked through that, and they came out of that, and today they're foster parents for a little boy named William. And walking through everything that comes with being a foster parent, with the idea that hopefully one day they'll be able to adopt that child. And it's amazing to watch them walk through this, because the truth is, if you were to go back a few years ago, as she said, there's no way I would have been able to handle what I see God walking me through today. There's no way I would be able to handle the uncertainty of everything that's ahead of us if I didn't know and realize God for who he's shown himself to be through this journey. Over the last few weeks here, we've been talking about this idea of fearless. And the fact that when you look at God's word, God's dream for you is that you would get to the point that you would become fearless. And in this conversation, we've looked at the destructive nature of fear and how in our lives, when fear begins to influence us and begins to influence the decisions that we're making, we see that it blinds us to the truth, that it impacts who and what we serve, and that over and over again, it leaves us in shame. And so last week, we began the journey away from that. Okay, what does it mean to take steps in my life where I become fearless, where I'm actually living out this abundant life that God's created for me? And we looked at how this begins with taking the step of fearing God, understanding his power, understanding how big he is, living in this constant realization that he is so big and so powerful, and I am so small. And that this journey begins with fearing him, and that it's only when we fear him that it becomes meaningful, when he says to us, listen, you don't have to be afraid anymore. It's only when we fear him that when we're actually afraid that it means anything, when he says, listen, I'm on your side. You don't have to be afraid anymore. But just like that story, for a lot of us, we walked out of last week and we're walking through this journey and we're struggling through this idea of fear. And we're like, okay, God, I understand that you're big, and I'm trying to embrace those moments where I realize how small I am. I'm reading through your word and realizing how big you are. But God, what do I do about the fear? Because I understand it's not just going to go away tomorrow. What do I do about that anxiety? What do I do when I'm in that moment at work and I know the right thing to do, but I'm terrified? What do I do as a spouse when I know the conversation that needs to be had, but I'm terrified? What do I do with the fear? And I understand that realizing how big you are diminishes it a little bit, but God, I still feel it. So what do I do with it? And that's what I want to talk about today, and that's what I want to dive into. We started off this conversation with a man named Peter. And we talked about how Peter allowed fear to begin to influence him and how it brought him to shame and how it actually drove him away from serving Christ to serving himself. And as we walked through this, the destructive nature of fear, we saw it in the life of this man named Peter. And today I want to go back to that, because I think you see in the interaction between Peter and Jesus what we need to begin to do in our own lives when it comes to this idea of fear and how we need to address that area of fear. Because I think in your life and in my life, no matter what the fear is, no matter where it's coming from, we need to get to the heart of that fear. And so in other words, a lot of times when we see fear in our lives, it shows up in one way, but the truth is it's representing something deeper. And so you look at your life, you know, are you actually afraid of losing him, or are you just afraid of being alone? Are you afraid of losing your job, or is it an issue of pride? Are you afraid of destroying your pride? And there are all these different questions that we need to begin to ask ourselves to get to the heart of the matter, which is not just, okay, what is the fear that I'm feeling, but what is actually behind it? And I think that we see this in the life of Peter, specifically as Jesus addresses in his life what we talked about a few weeks ago. And so I want to jump back into his life. The passage that we're going to be walking through is found in John chapter 21. We're going to start off in verse 1. And Jesus has rose from the dead. He's begun to interact with his disciples again, but he's kind of here and there, and they don't really know when he's going to show up or where he's going to show up. But all of a sudden, he shows up in Peter's life again, and we see him begin to work through fear in Peter's life. And so it starts off in John chapter 21, verse 1. It says, later, Jesus appeared again to the disciples beside the Sea of Galilee. This is how it happened. Several of the disciples were there, Simon Peter, Thomas, nicknamed the twin, Nathanael from Cana and Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples. Simon Peter, so they're just hanging out, right? Everybody's together. They're kind of waiting to see what's next, and whenever you find yourself in those situations, what we tend to do as human beings is to go back to what is most familiar. And so Simon Peter decides that he's going to step up and lead the group, and so he stands up and says, I'm going fishing. We'll come too, they all said. So they all went out in the boat, but they caught nothing all night. Now, for some of you, you think that they're just deciding to relax, right? Because for us, fishing means that we're just going to go out and relax. That's not what it meant for them. These guys were fishermen. And so as they're sitting there and they're waiting, and they really are in this point of confusion because they know that Jesus Christ has come back, and Jesus Christ talked over and over again about this mission that they were going to have and how he was going to make them fishers of men, but yet they don't really know how that's going to look and how that's going to work out. And so for Peter, they're sitting there. He's like, you know what? I'm just going back to what I know to do, and then I'll go from there. So he says, I'm going back. I'm just going to be a fisherman again. I'm going fishing. So they jump in the boat. They head out, but they can't catch anything. At dawn, Jesus was standing on the beach, but the disciples couldn't see who he was. He called out, fellows, have you caught any fish? Now, this version that we use of the Bible is usually really good, right? New Living Translation, I love it. I love it because I can take in large portions of God's Word really easy. It's really easy to read, but they blew it on this verse. Who says that? Fellows! What? They just blew it. I don't know where this came from, but it's supposed to be written the way we would talk today. Not at all. So he calls out, hey guys, you caught any fish? No, they replied. Then he said, throw out your net on the right-hand side of the boat and you'll get some. Now, this is kind of an insult to fishermen. Right? You ever go fishing with somebody who knows how to fish? Have you ever done something that you're really good at and brought someone along to teach you, and then they start giving you advice? Right? This happens to me sometimes. We'll go out golfing, and the person that I'm golfing with starts instructing me on my swing. I'm like, I'll show you a swing. Right? And so, first of all, it's a little insulting, but they decide that they're going to do it. So they did. They couldn't haul in the net because there were so many fish in it. Then the disciple Jesus loved said to Peter, it is the Lord. In other words, John, whenever he's talking about himself in the book of John, just refers to himself as the disciple Jesus loved. He had an incredible relationship, really close friends with Christ. And so he realizes as they're hauling in this net, oh my goodness, it's Jesus. And he says that to Peter. When Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his tunic for he had stripped for work. I don't know, I'm not going there. Jumped in the water and headed to shore. I told you before, Peter was a little eccentric, right? He doesn't wait for the boat to come in. He doesn't help the other guys pull in the fish. He jumps out and starts swimming straight for shore. The others stayed with the boat and pulled the loaded net to shore, for they were only about 100 yards from the shore. When they got there, they found breakfast waiting for them, fish cooking over a charcoal fire and some bread. Where did he get it? Bring some of the fish you've just caught, Jesus said. So Simon Peter went aboard and dragged the net to shore. There were 153 large fish, and yet the net hadn't torn. Now come and have some breakfast, Jesus said. None of the disciples dared to ask him, "Who are you?" They knew it was the Lord. Then Jesus served them the bread and the fish. This was the third time Jesus had appeared to his disciples since he had been raised from the dead. After breakfast, and this is where Jesus begins to have the conversation with Peter. After breakfast, Jesus asked Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" In other words, John, or he says to Peter, "Peter, I want to ask you a question. Am I more important? Is my mission more important than these fish?" And it's not just about, are you willing to follow me more than these fish? It's about who Peter is. It's about the fact that when he's uncertain of what he's supposed to be doing, he just decided, you know what, I'm just going to become a fisherman again. And this conversation that they're about to have is loaded with all sorts of meaning. And one of them is him calling into Peter's life of saying, okay, who are you really, Peter? Who are you going to serve really? Is it just about you providing for yourself, or do you actually trust me with the mission that I've told you that I have for you? And so he begins to walk through that. "Yes, Lord," Peter replied, "you know I love you." "Then feed my lambs," Jesus told him. Jesus repeated the question, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" "Yes, Lord," Peter said, "you know I love you." "Then take care of my sheep," Jesus said. A third time he asked him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter was hurt that Jesus asked the question a third time. He said, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus said, "Then feed my sheep." Now there's a reason that Peter's hurt that he asks three times. Because if you were with us a couple weeks ago, you'd know that he denied Christ three times. And so when Jesus asks him that third time, Peter's very aware of what Jesus is talking about. And I think this is one of the most beautiful moments in the entire Bible. Because you have to understand, there was a point in Peter's life where Jesus stepped into his life and said, "Listen, I'm going to build my church on you." And so for Peter, that was probably one of the greatest moments of his life. He's like, "You've got to be kidding me. I get to be a part of this. And not only do I get to be a part of this, but I get to be a key part in this." But then the events of the cross unfold, and he denies Christ three times. And I can guarantee you, in Peter's life, he believed that it was over. The mission might not be over, but for him, it was over. And for a lot of you, you feel the exact same way. And maybe God stepped into your life and you've experienced him. You're like, "Wow, I can't believe it's been like this." But then you blew it. And in those moments, you're like, "You know what? I'm just going to go back to being who I was before, because there's no way I'm still part of the plan. There's no way I still get to be part of this." And what's amazing about this moment and this conversation is that Jesus, he never leaves us where we are. In your life, God is never going to leave you on a destructive path. There's nothing that he's just going to pass over. There's nothing that he's just going to ignore. And in Peter's life, he doesn't just ignore it. He doesn't just kind of say, "Well, we're not going to talk about that." He's like, "Peter, we're going to talk about this." And he asks him three times on purpose. But as he asks him every time, he says, "Then feed my sheep." In other words, "Peter, I know what happened, and I haven't given up on you." And for some of you, you think that God's given up on you, and it's not true. Because that's not who he is. And so Peter's hurt. And you see this incredible conversation as Jesus is saying, listen, I know. But you're still going to be part of this. But the interesting thing is that that's not where the conversation ends. Because I think Jesus realized that if Peter was going to be a part of this, not only did he have to deal with what happened, but he had to deal with what was underneath it. He had to deal with what was behind it. He had to deal with what was driving that fear. And so as the conversation unfolds, it doesn't just end there. What he says after it is confusing unless you understand that I believe he's dealing with the fear. Because he says, then feed my sheep. He says, I tell you the truth, when you were young, you were able to do as you liked. You dressed yourself and went wherever you wanted to go. In other words, you had complete freedom. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and others will dress you and take you where you do not want to go. Jesus said this to let him know what kind of death he would glorify God. Then Jesus told him, follow me. There's a reason that he says, stretch out your hands. You see, he's telling Peter, you're going to die the same way I died. And others are going to dress you. You're going to be humiliated, Peter, the same way I was humiliated. And as you read the conversation, you're like, why does he say that? I mean, why is he bringing that up? What is he talking about? I'll tell you what he's doing. He's saying to Peter, listen, Peter, let's talk about what happened. But let's not just talk about what happened. Let's talk about the pride in your life that's driving it. And your fear of how you appear before the people around you is going to destroy you. And I want you to know right now where I'm calling you. And what I'm calling you to is going to require you to give up all of that pride. Because you are going to die the most humiliating death you could possibly imagine. Now follow me. You see, in your life and my life, God doesn't just want to talk about the effects of the fear. He wants to get to the heart of the matter. And in Peter's life, it wasn't just about being afraid in a moment. It was about pride. And Peter wanted to make sure that he looked good in front of the people around him. As a matter of fact, even in the conversation, you realize that Peter doesn't get it because immediately after Jesus says this to him, he responds, verse 20, Peter turned around and saw behind him the disciple Jesus loved, the one who had leaned over to Jesus during supper and asked, Lord, who will betray you? Peter asked Jesus, what about him? In other words, as soon as Jesus says this to him, listen, this is how you're going to die, Peter doesn't actually get it. And so he turns around and in the midst of the conversation, he says, yeah, but God, what's going to happen to him? Am I going to be the only one who's humiliated? What's going to happen to him? And Jesus responds to him. He says, Jesus replied, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what is it to you? As for you, follow me. You see, Jesus is trying to deal with Peter's pride. Unfortunately, Peter doesn't get it. As a matter of fact, this is something that's going to haunt Peter for the rest of his life and will be the source of Peter's greatest failures. You see it show up in Galatians chapter 2, verse 11 through 14, it says this. It says, "But when Peter came to Antioch, I had to oppose him to his face, for what he did was very wrong. When he first arrived, he ate with the Gentile Christians who were not circumcised. But afterwards, when some friends of James came, Peter wouldn't eat with the Gentiles anymore. He was afraid of criticism from these people who insisted on the necessity of circumcision. As a result, other Jewish Christians followed Peter's hypocrisy, and even Barnabas was led astray by their hypocrisy." You see, for the rest of Peter's life, this idea of pride would drive fear, resulting in failure. And in your life and in my life, if we're going to begin to live lives that are fearless, it's not going to be simply about addressing the feeling of fear that we experience in the moment. It's going to be about getting to the heart of the matter. What is behind it? It was interesting at dinner group on Friday. Dinner group's always interesting for me because of the fact that I know where we're going with the series, and they always try to get that out of me, and I say, no, I'm just a normal person in a dinner group. And so there's always this, you know, they'll be having certain conversations, and I'm like, well, I'm not going to jump into that yet because that's where we're going, and I want them to kind of talk it out beforehand. But it was really cool because at dinner group on Friday, as we're talking, one of the members of the group brought up the fact that, listen, there are those things that we call near idols and those things that we call far idols, and sometimes what we're worshiping actually reveals something deeper about who we are and something deeper that we worship, whether that be acceptance or whether that be control or security, whatever that may be. And it was awesome because I'm like, oh, I should just have this guy do the message on Sunday. And in your life and in my life, that's what God wants to do. He wants to get beyond just the fear that we're feeling in the moment to what's at the heart of it. And those desires of our heart that are core to who we are and drive us in good ways and in bad ways. And so this desire to be loved, this desire to be accepted, this desire to be significant, to do something significant, to be a part of something significant, this desire to have security. And in your life and in my life, I think if we're going to move to this point where we are fearless, we have to learn what it means to stop in the midst of fear and look beyond just what we're feeling at that moment. And so today what I want to do is I want to give you three steps. And if you have your notes with you, I encourage you to just jot these down. But three steps that I believe we should consistently walk through when we experience fear. The first one comes out of Psalm 139, 23 through 24. It says this. It says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. Point out anything in me that offends you and lead me along the path of everlasting life." The first thing that you need to do in that moment where you're afraid is you need to ask God to examine your heart. And invite him into that moment. Okay, God, I am terrified right now of this conversation. God, what is going on in my heart? God, I know what I feel and I know what I want to do, but God, what is the source of this? What is the idol? What is it that I'm worshiping instead of worshiping you? What am I looking for in this moment that I need to be looking for in you? You see, the truth is that without his wisdom, we're not going to be able to see beyond that instant. To be able to see what's at the heart level driving this fear. And so in your life and in my life, when we feel that, and I realize that this is a difficult thing to begin to build into our life, because when you're afraid, you just react. But if you're going to be fearless, you have to resist the urge to simply react, and you have to be willing to engage God in that conversation and say, okay, God, what's happening in my life? And maybe it doesn't begin by resisting the urge. Maybe it begins by realizing, oh man, I blew it. I acted out of fear. And rather than allowing that to drive us away from God because we realize we did something that we shouldn't have done, we realize we made a decision that we shouldn't have made, understanding exactly what we see in Peter's life, that God doesn't give up on us when we make mistakes, that we can still engage him in that conversation, that he still wants to lead us forward, that he's not going to leave us behind. So maybe it begins by, man, I blew it and I realized I acted out of fear. God, what's driving this? What am I looking for here? As he begins to reveal that to you, then the next one comes out of James 5:16, where it says, confess your sins to each other and pray for each other so that you may be healed. The earnest prayer of a righteous person has great power and produces what wonderful results. The next thing that you need to do is you need to confess it. And I'm not talking about you and God. God already knows it. He doesn't need you to go tell him about it, right? You're already having that conversation with him. I'm talking about your dinner group or a group of people around you that you know cares about you, that you know is going to be able to see this if it shows up in your life again. You see, you need people around you like Peter had around him, where Paul comes to him and says, listen, the decision that you're making, it's being driven by pride, just like all these other decisions in your life. And you remember that moment where you denied Christ because you were afraid of what people thought? It's showing up again in your life. And you need to go to your dinner group and say, listen, I'm afraid, and it's being driven by this. I have this desire to be in control all the time. And anything that threatens that, it freaks me out, and I make terrible decisions. You need to ask God to examine it. You need to confess it. And then the last thing is, you need to sacrifice it. And here's where really the rubber meets the road. And I think this is where Christ was trying to lead Peter. I think the reason that Christ gives Peter the ultimate example of how he was going to be humiliated is because he wanted to root that out of Peter at that moment. And so in that conversation, he's saying to Peter, listen, I want you right now just to sacrifice your pride. You just give that up. You just say, you know what, God? Okay, I'm going to live the rest of my life being humiliated. God, I'm willing to live the rest of my life with people criticizing me, with people looking down on me to follow you. You see, the part of the problem in our lives is that we look at idols and these things that we worship, these things that we crave over Christ, and we say, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to kind of scale that back. And so we realize that we worship relationships more than we worship him, and we realize that we're acting out of this incredible fear of being alone, and we're making incredibly bad decisions about that because we're worshiping this idea of a relationship. And so in our lives, we say, I'm just going to scale that back. I'm just going to care about it a little less. I don't think that's how it works. As a matter of fact, as you read through God's word, at no point is there a point where God says, you need to worship that idol a little less. You know what you need to do? You just need to kind of scale back on your worship of that idol and worship me more. That's not what he says. As you read through the Old Testament and you look at how they deal with idols, there's only one way to get rid of an idol. You destroy it. And in Peter's life, I think as Jesus is having this conversation with him, you see him trying to destroy that idol. And I think in our lives, if we're going to get rid of it, if we're going to live a life that's fearless, we have to destroy it. And so we come to God and we say, okay, God, I'm willing to be a failure for the rest of my life. Here's my success. It's all yours. Because I'm going to look for what I need from you instead of success. Okay, God, I'm never going to be loved by anyone else in my life but you. Here is that desire to be loved. It's all yours. I don't know what it is in your life. Success, control, acceptance, love, security. But if you want to be fearless, you have to be willing to sacrifice it, to lay it on the altar and say, okay, God, I choose you, even though it cost me that. You have to be willing to sacrifice it. And in your life and in my life, God's desire is that we would become like Jesus Christ. And in Jesus Christ's life, he sacrificed being loved. He sacrificed being successful. He sacrificed acceptance, control, all of it to follow his Father. And when he did, he was fearless. And the same thing can be true for you. You don't have to be afraid anymore. Will you pray with me? Father, today as we walk through this, the truth is that this is probably the hardest moment. Because we want to hang on to those idols. We want to hang on to those things that we think keep us safe because it's so difficult for us to trust you 100%. But Father, you love us too much to leave us on destructive paths. And so just as you did in Peter's life, over and over and over again, you are stepping into our lives to lead us to something better. Father, I pray that you wouldn't allow us to stay where we are. That you would root out the fear. That you would do whatever is necessary in the lives of every single person in this room to root out those idols at the heart of our fear. And that we would discover the fearlessness that comes